Good afternoon. Apologies for the lateness in getting this transmission out, but we are now on the going to study as part of the second podcast in our series on Haggadah Shel Pesach, commonly known as the Arba'a Banim. As promised in the first shiur, we are not going in textual order of, in sequential order of the Haggadah, but rather in thematic order. And in the first shiur, we discussed the overview of the Seder, the structure of the Seder, an introduction of the notion that we're working towards something greater, and yet we haven't yet got figured out what that greater thing is. But a significant piece that appears at the beginning of the text of the Haggadah is commonly known as the Arba'a Banim. And what this piece seems designed to do is to clarify the textual source and basis for the mitzvah, which is a variegated mitzvah in its performance and its style and application, which is the one of the key components to the evening, and that is the mitzvah of Haggadah. As I pointed out in the first shiur, there are really two different modes of transmission and information sharing that happen on this very special evening. One of them is called Haggadah, and that we'll deal with momentarily. And the other one is known as Sipur. And I noted that there are six different places in the Torah where we are commanded to share information about the Exodus. Four of them, which we'll look at forthwith, deal with interactions between a father and a son. In other words, a possessor of knowledge and a seeker of knowledge, as it were, or a beneficiary of knowledge, in which there is a particular piece of information that needs to be transmitted from one generation to the next. The second entirely different piece of this is a mitzvah of Sipur, where Moshe Rabbeinu says, Zachor et hayom hazeh asher yitzatev mitzrayim et shmot yud gimel gimel, Exodus 13:3, Moses says, remember this day in which you left Egypt, meaning that there is an obligation to discuss and to commemorate and to relive through discussion the Exodus. And that applies to a peer-driven conversation in which no one single person or group is the power center, if you will, of the information. No one is the holder of the information and the others are the recipients, but rather it is a shared discussion. We're going to focus most of our attention in tonight's shiur on the Arba'a Banim, but one note to take a look at in advance. And that is that there are two famous and yet somewhat enigmatic paragraphs that appear near just before this passage of the Arba'a Banim. One of them is the famous story of the five Chachamim, Rabbi Elazar, Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Azar, Rabbi Kiva, and Rabbi Tarfon, that were up all night discussing Yitziat Mitzrayim until their students came and said it's time for Kriyat Shema in the morning. And that is followed by a passage which in some Girsaot has it as an independent passage, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Re Ani Kaven Shivim Shana, and in other passages, the way the Rambam reads it, is Amar Lahem, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, meaning as part of the same conversation, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was trying to promote the idea of remembering the Exodus every night. Now, the context here is very clearly collegial. There are peers sitting around the table discussing Yitziat Mitzrayim, parenthetically, and we'll come back to this in our discussion of the Arba'a Banim. They are sitting bereft of any particular symbols that are the focus of the discussion. And the best proof of that is that they are sitting after midnight. And according to at least Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, by the time midnight has come, all of the food symbols would be removed from the table because he is of the opinion that the Korban Pesach may not be eaten after midnight. And therefore, this is a collegial discussion being shared. Following that, we then have the framework for the other component of discussion, which is Haggadah. It begins with the paragraph, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Shantan Tov Alam Yisrael Baruch Hu. And that may be there because we're going to, for the first time that evening, discuss specific texts of the Torah and read them exegetically, in other words, Midrash. But now let's see what the entire piece is. I'm going to read it from the Haggadah, and then take us back to the original text. It is important to note that there are no four sons. There's no such thing as four sons. The text does not say there are four sons. The text says, the Haggadah says, that the Torah relates as if there are four sons, meaning that the Torah is relating to four different father-son type of interactions. And it names them Chacham, the wise son, the Rasha, the wicked son, Tam, the simple son. By the way, in the Yerushalmi is not called Tam, which has its sort of childlike sense of innocence, but rather he's called Tipesh, stupid son. And then there is the She'eino Yodea Lishol. Now, where do these four sons come from? How did we get to them? That's a large question that we will deal with in the Shir. The text then goes on to say, Chacham Mahu Omer, Ma'idot V'chukim Mishpatim Asher Tziva Adonai Eloheinu Etchem. Now, this is directly a quote from Sefer Dvarim, Perek Vav, Pasuk Chaf. I managed the Deuteronomy 6, verse 20. A child turns to his father and says, what are the laws and statutes and testimonies, however you want to translate them, Eidot Chukim Mishpatim, that God, our God, commanded you. Af ata imorlo kichot ha-pesach, ein maftirin achar pesach afikoman. Much ink has been spilled on the content of the answer, but the answer itself is directly an answer to the question. The child asks the question, what are the laws? And you answer him by teaching him the laws of the Pesach. And one of the traditional explanations is that the phrase should be, kilchot ha-Pesach ad ein maftir nachar Pesach afikoman, meaning you teach him the laws of the Pesach all the way until the very last law of the Korban Pesach, which is that, in the later formulation of the Mishnah, that there may be no carousing or dessert eaten after the Korban Pesach. Ein maftir nachar Pesach afikoman. Good. Now this is very, very troubling. And it's troubling because you open up the Torah, open up the Sefer Dvarim, the book of Deuteronomy, open up to Perek Vav, chapter 6, and take a look at verse 20 and see what it says. Ki shalchav in chamachar lemor, when in the future your child asks you, Ma'i dod v'chukim v'shpatim asher tziva Adonai Eloheinu etchem, and the same question, and what are you told to tell him? Avadim ayinu l'faro b'mitzrayim v'yotzeyenu Adonai Eloheinu misham yad chazaka v'zoran tuya. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and God took us out with a strong hand, and he gave us these laws, and these laws will be good for us, so that we will have a long life, and we'll have tzedakah, etc. In other words, the child's question is, what are the laws? And the answer the father is told to give is the historic background to the laws. The Exodus, the giving of the law, the value of the law, the reward of the law, etc. Which itself is awkward within the book of Dvarim. Why is it that the son asks, what are the laws, and we're told to answer him by not answering the question? The Haggadah becomes even stranger, because in the Haggadah, we ignore the answer of the Torah, as if to say, yeah, the Torah said say that, we got a better idea. What we're going to answer, what we're going to tell you to answer is, answer the question, and the question is specifically about Korban HaPesach. What becomes trebly strange here is that in the context of the original question asked, as it's presented in the Torah, it has nothing to do with Pesach. The context there is not given. The child is not sitting at the Seder table or watching a Korban Pesach or watching you destroy Chametz. The child just asks you, what are the laws? Which means it could be happening anytime. It could be happening on Tuesday in the summer. It could be happening in the middle of Hanukkah. It could be happening anytime. He asks you these laws, and then you turn around and give him the answer of the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. That's piece number one and its difficulties. And by the way, because of the limitations of the Shir, both because we want to make the Shir accessible to those who do not have a text in front of them, to allow for commuting and working out, etc. And second of all, because of the time limitation of keeping it to half an hour, we are going to avoid dealing with the various girsaot, except in one place or in a couple places, the different versions, the textual versions, and the version of the Yerushalmi, which is entirely different. We're going to stick to a comparison between the way that it's reported in the Haggadah, which is more or less the text of the 3rd century Mechilta, de Rabbi Ishmael, the rabbinic commentary on the book of Exodus, and compare that to what the Torah itself says. So that's the Chacham, and we noted three questions about the Chacham. The first question is, why in the Torah we're not told to answer the question? Second of all, why the Haggadah ignores the answer the Torah gives and provides a whole different answer? And third of all, the entire context in the Torah is not about Pesach, and here it's brought into Pesach, and then the answer we're giving him is about Pesach. Remember, the child did not ask about Pesach. He asked about the laws. Second, Rasha Mahu Omer. What does the wicked son say? Ma avodah zot lachem. Now, the full quote here is from Exodus 12:26-27. The child says, Vayak yomru aleichem b'neichem. When his children say to you, Ma ha'avodah zot lachem. What is this worship to you? Now, we have to note that there is absolutely nothing untoward about the child's statement or question. Ma ha'avodah zot lachem is a perfectly reasonable thing to say. Worship in the Torah is referred to as avodah. So therefore, bringing an offering is avodah. We'll take a step back and note that the context here in the Torah is the offering of the Korban Pesach. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Bnei Israel, in next year, be in Israel, that was of course the plan, and you will bring the Korban Pesach, you will continue to do this avodah. It's not just a one-time in history Korban, but it'll be done every year on the anniversary. And your children will turn to you and say, Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem, which basically means, what does this worship mean to you? And it's all a very reasonable question. After all, if somebody's father is doing something and the child is not himself initiating it, and he sees the father attributes much meaning to it, he says, what does it mean to you? What's the meaning? There's nothing wrong with the question. The answer that we're told to give him in the Haggadah is very angry. Lachem v'lo lo. We interpret his last word of lachem, to you, as being exclusive and saying, oh, I'm not interested in this, but you're interested in this. What does it mean to you? And it's a degrading type of statement. So we respond that way. Lachem v'lo lo, meaning it was meaningful to us and not to him. Wild, over-the-top statement. Because he excluded himself from the community by saying, what does it mean from you? And he's not included. He suddenly has rejected the basic principle. It's important to note. Kafar ba'ikar, and this is something that we'll return to in the second to last lecture on the series. Kafar ba'ikar, to deny the basic principle, is a term used by the rabbis to denote atheism. Now, how is this child, who's, by the way, a child, how has this child earned this terrible classification of kafar ba'ikar just because, at the very worst, he's not interested in participating in a korban? After all, the worst that we could attribute to his question is that he doesn't want to participate in the korban. The best that we could attribute is that he sees the korban, he wants to find out what it's about. How did he get to kafar ba'ikar? So we'll take a look at this a little bit in the context tonight of this shiur, and again in the penultimate shiur of the series, we'll talk more from a historic perspective. And then we continue. That's how we interpret his words. But what do we say to him? V'afata ke'achinav. Set his teeth on edge. In other words, say something rough. It doesn't mean to hit him. Say something rough. And now we're quoting another pasuk from approximately 25 or so pasukim later, where in chapter 13 of Exodus it says, "Tell your child this is why God took me out of Egypt." That is a verse that we later attribute to being said to the child doesn't know what to ask. But now we're pulling it, manipulating it, if you will, and pulling it out to use it as an answer, as a battering ram against the wicked son. And we interpret, Ba'avur zeh asa Adonai li, this is why God did for me, li v'lo lo. He did it for me and not for him. Who's the him? The him is you. You, the wicked son. But we don't talk to the wicked son, we talk around the wicked son. Meaning, this is what he did for me and not him. And you're pointing to the wicked son. If he had been there, he, the wicked son, he would not have been redeemed. Because, of course, he would, we assume, have opted to hang out on the streets or not to be in a Jewish home or to hang out with these Egyptian buddies and not be protected by the Korban and the blood, etc. Parenthetically, it's important to note, and here there is one textual variant that's fascinating, that in some of the versions of the Haggadah, and I believe this is also the version in the Yerushalmi, the text says, Li v'lo lo oto ha'ish. Ilo haya sham oto ha'ish, lo haya oto ha'ish nigal. Instead of just using the lo, it refers to him as oto ha'ish, that man, which is something used in rabbinic literature to note somebody whose name we don't want to even mention. Occasionally, Haman is referred to that way, but as we'll see in a few shiurim from now, there may be a particular historic reference. But again, this rasha is very bizarre, and again, to keep it consistent, I'll ask three questions here. The first question is, what's wrong with his statement? What is it about Maha Avodah Zot Lachem that makes him so upsetting? And how do we identify him as a Ben Rashat? Second of all, why is it that we're told to that we describe him? I mean, it's really part of the first question, is Hofer Ba'ikar. But how is it that we pull a verse from another son's interaction and utilize it here? What's the connection between the two? The third question is what, again, just like with the Chacham, why are we ignoring the answer the Torah gives? And now I'll tell you what the Torah says to say. When your son will say to you, this is the quote, when your son will say to you, your children will say to you, Ma avodah zot lachem, va'amartem, you shall declare, Zevach Pesach hu l'Adonai asher pasach abateinu Yisrael b'Mitzrayim, nokpot Mitzrayim abateinu Yitzil. It is a Pesach offering to God that he pasach, either meaning passed over or protected our houses, when he destroyed the Egyptians and he saved our houses, right? And that's the answer given. So why do we ignore that answer here in our dealing with the Rasha? The last two are quite easy, because the last two are presented in the Haggadah exactly as they're presented in the Torah. Tam Mahu Omer. Now, how did we identify the first child as a Chacham? We'll get to in a minute. How did we identify this recent child as a Rasha? We'll get to that first, before the Chacham. And you'll see why. But this next child is called a simpleton, or as I said in Yerushalmi, a stupid son. Why? Because what does he do? He turns around and says, Mazot. Now, what's the context? In Exodus 13, starting from verse 9, there is a description, verse 10, there is a description of the obligation to separate the firstborn of the flock and of the family and dedicate them to God. The flock goes, if it's a behemah Torah, it goes as an offering. If it's a proper animal, if it's an improper animal or a donkey, shall we say, it has to be redeemed with a lamb. And if it's a human being, it's redeemed for money. But we're familiar with the redemption of the firstborn. And then the text says, Vayaki shalchavin chamachalimor mazot. Your child will ask you, what is this? What is this? He's referring to the separation of the firstborn to bring it to the Kohen, which again is not happening at Pesach. It's happening likely at the end of the summer, which is when the flock gives birth. And he says, Mazot, what is this? What does the text say to tell him? God took us out of Egypt with a strong hand. But by the way, it continues. When Pharaoh was stubborn and didn't let us go, and then God killed the firstborn, and therefore I'm bringing the firstborn, and you should put it for a sign on your hand and for frontlet, for totafot, a crown between your eyes, because God took us out with a strong hand. That's all part of the answer. We clip it and give only the first part in the Haggadah. And then we identify this child as simple, because this question is a simple question. We have one other interaction between parents and children that's presented here. And now he's called the She'inu Yodei Lishol. She'inu Yodei Lishol at Ptachlo. You have to initiate it. She'nemar v'gata levincha v'yom ahu le'mor v'avur ze'a sa'adunai li v'tzeitim v'mitzrayim. And this is why God took me out of Egypt. Now what's interesting is we're using the same verse here that we used for the wicked son. What's going on? So we have the Chacham in three questions, the Rasha in three questions, the Tam in one question, why we clip the answer, the Sheinu the Daily Shol in one question, why we're using the same answer for him that we used for the Rasha. But really, the entire piece needs to be reworked and re-understood. So let's start from ABCs. The Torah never calls any of these children by an adjective, not a wise son, not a wicked son, etc. The Torah never refers to them that way. All the Torah does is to say, your child's going to ask you the following question, here's the answer you give him. And in one case, tell your kid. So now, there is a basic rule of hermeneutics, a basic rule of Torah interpretation, which is the heart and soul of much of the Midrashim, of the exegesis of the rabbis. And that is that the Torah in legal texts is economical. I will stress that again. The Torah in legal text is economical with its words. Meaning, there are many areas in the Torah where the Torah uses extra words and superfluous words and repeats itself and uses synonyms, as an example, in poetry. Shirat Hayam, Shirat Moshe. As an example, in celebratory texts like Bamidbar Zion and like all of Vayakal Pkudei, the repetition of the construction of the Mishkan. These are all celebration texts. Including some narratives, like the repetition of the story of the finding of a wife for Yitzchak in Genesis 24. The Torah is not shy about repeating a particular story, or repeating a particular motif, or fleshing out a phrase by using a synonym when if it's in the context of poetry. And the Chachamim never stood on that. They never said, what is this extra phrase teaching us when it comes to non-legal text? But when it comes to legal text, the basic principle is that the Torah is very economical with its words. Any extra word, indeed, in some cases, even an extra letter or a unique turn of the phrase, is there to teach us something special. And that's why the rabbis have a big problem. Because you take a look at the Torah, and the Torah tells you, teach your kid about the Exodus. But it doesn't say it once, it doesn't say it twice, it says it four times. And it says it in different contexts. In one context, in Exodus 12, when your child sees you doing the Korban Pesach and says, what is this avodah? Give him an answer. The second one, when you're sitting at the table and you've gotten rid of the chametz and you're eating matzah, tell your kid, this is why God took us out of Egypt. The third context, sometime, maybe like I said, late in the summer, you're separating the firstborn sheep and your kid says, what is this? You tell him, God took us out of Egypt. And the fourth one is, at any particular point where your child says, what are all the laws? Sit down and tell them about the Exodus. So rabbis take a look at this and say, there's no reason for the Torah to repeat the same basic command four different times. If the Torah has a mitzvah, which is to teach your children about the Exodus, so the Torah should say, v'igata talavincha, teach your child. Why do we need it all four? So chachamim take a critical look, use critical textual tools to take a look at the four texts and compare the texts. And by comparing the texts one against the other, sudden differences, some of them gross and some of them fine, some of them obvious and some of them taking a little bit more work to find, come out which clarify the unique orientation or address of the particular text. Let's start with the beginning. A very good place to start. Exodus 12, verse 26. The child, v'ayakim ru'al lechem b'nechem, when your children say to you. Now, there is nothing wrong with that phrase, yet. And yet, if you line up all of the different instances, you will find that there are, of course, out of the four, there are only three where the child says anything, because there's one where the child doesn't open his mouth. And in the other two, Exodus 13, verse 14, and Deuteronomy 6, verse 20, in other words, Shmot Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yod Dalet, and Dvarim Vav, Pasuk Chaf, the child is the one who initiates the conversation, and the verb used to describe what the child is doing is Shin Aleph Lamed Sha'al, ask. Now, once I see that, I know that I have an alternative to Aleph Mem Resh Omer, and that alternative is ask. Now I look at Exodus 12 and I see that this child is not asking, this child is declaring. But I get very surprised because I look at the end of his words and I want to punctuate it with a question mark. The child declares, Maha Avodah Zot Lachem, simply translated, what does this worship mean to you? And the little word ma, the question what, tells me it's a question. So how do I have something that the words are the words of a question, but the verb describing them describes a declaration? Well, the answer is quite clear. I have here a child who is pretending or posing as a question, as a questioner, and yet behind it there's a declaration. This is something we're all familiar with, where somebody is asked at the end of a lecture, are there any questions, and somebody gets up to ostensibly ask a question but really wants to make a point. This is what we call a rhetorical question, when a question is presented as a question, but really the premise of the question is a statement. And that's what happens here. The child's not interested in information. And indeed, we see that we are told, and that's how the first sense we get that this child is not okay. Because he's not really interested in information. He's interested in poking and trying to disprove or discredit what we're doing. And then we see it from the response. What does the Torah say? How does the Torah say to respond? So there's two clues here. Again, a comparative piece. Line up all four children. The next child that comes along in Exodus 13:8, Yud Gimel Chet, the phrase used is Vigadata Livincha. You shall say to your son. In same chapter in verse 14, Ve'amarta Livincha. Ve'amarta Elav. You shall say to him. And in Deuteronomy, Ve'amarta Livincha. Say to your son. What does it say here in Exodus 12? Ve'amartem. And there's no word of connection to the son. Declare. Which means this child is supposed to get an answer which he's supposed to hear, but is not directed to him. In other words, by our actions, we ignore him. We blow past him. We make a loud declaration that this is a Pesach offering that God brought, that we bring to God to thank Him for passing over the houses, not killing us when the Egyptians were killed, etc. But the child is not directly addressed. What's the sense of that? What if we look carefully at that, what's happening? The child is essentially being excluded. He's being excluded even though he's sitting there by being told, you have an interest in poking, then you are essentially excluded. And that's why the next phrase is, well, the fish shall see it, that's no mean aklal. What this child has done is to take himself out of the group. So in other words, what the Haggadah is doing is saying, yes, there's an answer the Torah gives, but that's not the answer that we say to the child. That's a declaration we make. And indeed, we'll make it much later in the Seder in the context of Rabban Gamliel, which we'll talk about in Tushiurim. Rabban Gamliel says you have to explain the symbols. There we're going to explain what the Pesach is. But here, what is the real point that we're trying to score? We're trying to tell the child, you really don't belong here. And therefore, what's the first thing that we say about him? We clarify. Lachem, the word that we're now going to jump on, which is really not itself a bad word, but now that we understand what his intent is, we jump on him, we say, Lachem, oh, what does it mean to you? Lachem, although it means to you, but it doesn't mean, means to us, but it doesn't mean to you. You're excluding yourself. You've excluded yourself, kafar ba'ikar. Why kafar ba'ikar? That's something that we'll have to leave for the later shiur, but it's a very serious crime. And by the way, kafar ba'ikar could be interpreted here as be saying he has denied the basic principle of Jewish unity and a participation in the Jewish national destiny. And as a result, he would not have been redeemed. So what do you tell him? You quote the next pasuk, which is a pasuk said to the child that didn't ask a question. Now, why is that? I once heard from Rav Elon, may live and be well, a very interesting piece. He said, if you look at the text of the Haggadah, of the Torah, you will see that the very next interaction between father and son, after our wicked son is dispatched with this declaration, is the one that's ostensibly to the child who doesn't ask. But if we don't know about the Haggadah, we don't know about the Keneged Arba'anim, the four false sons, the four imaginary sons, we could easily interpret there as being connected. The child says, what does this mean? You make a declaration, and then later on you turn around and you tell him, Bavur Zah, Sa'adonai Li, this is what God did for me. And now the word Li becomes very exclusive. Li did it for me, didn't do it for you. Meaning, had you been there, you wouldn't have been redeemed. This, by the way, is very interesting because that means that the word Li is going to be used in two nearly opposite style modes within the same passage in the Haggadah, which is the Arba Abanim. To the wicked son, that's how it's used. So now, what's happened, to summarize, we've identified the type of child that is asking here based on comparing this question with the others, and we would never have had that if the Torah had not given us other frameworks of question and answer, in which it used a more appropriate verb. That's how we understand that this child is trying to score points. Then we take every word he says. The Yerushalmi says, why does he call it avodah? He's saying it's a big tircha, it's a big pain. We interpret in the Mechilta and the Haggadah Lachem, what to you, Lachem v'lo. So we jump on every word, just about every word that he says, because we now understand where he's coming from. And then we declare that he's put himself outside of the pale of the group. And then we quote the next interaction between father and child to exclude him essentially from what happened. Now, we jump ahead to the next text. And the next text is, of course, that same one, which is, V'gadata l'vincha v'yom ahu le'mor. So there's two ways to interpret this text. One is as a continuation of the previous interaction, but that's a little difficult because the previous interaction is a good 25, 30 psukim earlier, verses earlier. The other possibility is to say this is an independent interaction. And what's the point of this interaction? Why does the Torah have to repeat it? Because if I only had the first text, I would think that the only time you're obligated to educate your child is when your child asks. Meaning, the Torah obligates you to engage your child when your child shows the initiative to ask. Before that, he's not ready. And there are many mitzvot like that, in which the obligation to participate very much depends on the child's readiness. There's even an obligation like that, according to some authorities, on a national level. In Deuteronomy 17, when the Torah obligates us to appoint a king, it begins by saying, when you come to the land and you say, I want a king, then give a king. And so Nachmanides says, that means that there is no obligation to appoint a king until the people come and ask for one. So you might think that the same thing applies here. Therefore, the Torah has to go out of its way to say, you tell your kid. In other words, you initiate the conversation. Now, as far as this tricky word, li, There's a lot of psychological nuance to this. And I see from our clock that this shiur will very likely be broken into two parts. So, Imir Tzashem, on Thursday night, part two will come. But the word li, which means for me, and is an exclusive word, me and not you, and I pointed out that therefore this phrase is being used really in two opposite directions, to exclude the rasha, and in some sense to educate the one who doesn't know anything. But the word li really does have those two implications. After all, when you say this is something for me, that can be done very much with pushing the other away, saying this is mine, not yours. Or it can be done very much as an enticement. And it really depends on who you're talking with. When you have little children, the greatest motivator to involve them and engage them is to forbid. In other words, you have a friend, company, come over at night after you put the children to bed. But not much after they put the children to bed. And you want to visit with them. And they keep poking out. They want to see what's going on. And they want a little piece of the hors d'oeuvre you're having or whatever it is. If you tell them this is private time, this is only for the adults, they're going to be up all night. If on the other hand you were to invite them out and say, oh, come, let's talk about the stock market together, they'll be lost in 1 minute. It's by excluding them and making them feel this is an adult thing that they suddenly want to be involved. Like every little boy wants to practice shaving, and every little girl puts on makeup, all of those stereotypes. But the stereotypes actually play out. Little kids want to be like their older brother and sister, or like their parents, and they want to act like that, especially when it's something that's out of their reach. The same way, if a father turns to his child, to a very young child, a child who's too young to formulate a question, says, this is what God did for me, the child's immediate reaction is going to be, me too, I want to be involved. If on the other hand, you have a child who's already old enough to figure out a nuanced way to spear and to oppose and to barb and says, what does this mean to you, etc., and then you say, this is what God did for me, there the implication is very different. There it's me and not you. You're not part of this. And if you had been there at the time, you, of course, would have made a very poor decision based on your attitude now and would not have been redeemed. Mirtz Hashem, on Thursday, we will continue and finish up the Arba Banim and then move on further in an analysis of the Haggadah Shel Pesach.